So welcome to the show. My name is Anija Adebowale. The best show in the whole of the universe is news to sports. Lot of actions across the world, especially the basketball world. And we are kind of in for a shocker. I'll allow my guests to introduce themselves. We're gonna start with the usual suspect, Oroku Koji.
What fans is calling me a usual suspect because he has threatened to support Inter Milan simply because I'm wearing proudly wearing my AC Milan jersey. But we'll let you dissect where his allegiances lie. The basketball NBA playoffs started in earnest. Young stars coming out and taking ownership of the game. All this we will dissect together with Benzema, possibly for the Ballon d'Or. Stay tuned for a great event.
All right, perfect. Jay.
Yeah, hello, sport fans around the world, and welcome to today's show. It was a fantastic weekend for boxing fans, talking about the Errol Spence and Yordanis Ugas unification bout over the weekend. I'm sure we're going to also delve into that during the show. You're all welcome.
All right, perfect. Lali.
Yeah, hello sporting fans around the world. You're welcome to the show. Between last week and today, a lot has happened in the sporting world. From Pep Guardiola becoming the first manager to qualify as a manager for the semifinal for the ninth time. That was a record formerly held by him and Carlo Ancelotti, which one other person. Chelsea and Liverpool will be playing again probably for the fourth time this year. The last three meetings has ended in stalemate, if not for the penalty shootout. How this will end, we wait to see. And for City, Champions League over FA Cup, that's the only thing I can say. We'll discuss all this in details. Welcome to the show once again.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Olali. We jump straight into the NBA where we had, of course, the play-ins in the course of the week, but we're not going to delve into that so much. But the start of the playoffs, round one, looks like a big fight amongst the guys in the NBA right now. Round one, and we're looking at different sizing up. The 76ers showing the Toronto Raptors who the real boss are. Should, or should I say, lack of technical deficiency on the part of Nets with the Celtic, whom most people have tipped, will be beaten by the Nets in the course of the series. It's turning to something else currently, right now. Are they playing in New York right now? In Boston.
TD Garden in Boston.
Yeah. Like right now in Boston. And of course, we're looking to the games with the Bulls and the Buck. And the question on everybody's lips right now. And of course, to the Timberwolves and the Memphis Grizzlies, everybody thought the Grizzlies would have an edge over the Timberwolves, but doesn't look so. Currently right now, the Golden State Warriors coming out to say, okay, who's going to beat us? And the Suns looks like who's going to beat them as well. And I remember Ali clearly saying it's going to be the fight between the point guards, between if the Suns eventually meets the Golden State Warriors at the point in this series. Kachi, I'm going to start with you. Ali brought the brackets 2 days ago or today, if I'm not mistaken, he brought a bracket.
Today, you guys were sleeping. Canadians were sleeping.
pick up bracket challenge in the NBA. And it looks, I'm looking at it over and over again. For me, I can't see pass from the East. I can't see pass the Golden State Warriors.
From the West.
Sorry, I can't see pass Golden State Warriors. From the East, It's definitely going to be between the 76ers and, as it stands today, as of today, it's going to be between the 76ers and the Buck. And I can't see past that, honestly. What's your view and the overall view? Maybe that's not the correct question I should be asking you. I should be asking you, will be able to stop the Suns? That's my first question.
Okay.
Do you want me to ask you all the questions at the same time, or you want
We'll take it gradually. For the first time in a very long while, the West, I believe, is not as competitive as they used to be. Especially with the Suns back-to-back dominating proceedings. Yes, they did not finish as the best team in the West last year. That went to the Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. But they ultimately represented the West in the NBA Finals. And this year, they also got the best overall best records with 64 wins. In terms of who would likely stop them, even though they've not played their first game this year against New Orleans Pelicans, I think the Golden State Warriors gave us a snippet of their new depth lineup would be like. Let's not forget that the Warriors were very famous for playing small ball during their last championship run. It looks like they have a new iteration of their small ball lineup now with Steph, Draymond, Clay, Jordan Poole, and Andrew Wiggins. We only saw that lineup in their game one against, trying to remember, against the, I can't remember who they played now yesterday. For some reason. Against the Denver Nuggets, we only saw that lineup for just 5 minutes in game one. And in that 5 minutes, they outscored the Nuggets by 14 points. Because the Phoenix Suns only have one potentially big ball center in 18, I believe that they would probably be the best team to face them if they go on that small ball. But it's still early days. It's still round one. For me, even though I've not completed my bracket, shame on me. I really do think it's the Phoenix Suns conference to lose until somebody actually shatters that bracket. So I think it will be the Suns versus the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, The Suns will go to the finals. I don't see any team going against them. Olale was right when he said it would be a battle of the point guards. But right now, let's not forget that Steph is not starting. Steph came from the bench. We really don't know if they rushed him back to the playoffs. Even though I watched his interview with Draymond Green on Draymond's podcast, I don't think he's at 100% yet. If any of their rounds take them to 7 games, then it's advantage Phoenix Suns, my opinion.
All right, perfect. Olale, for you, we're stopping the Suns as well. Nobody.
As it stands today, I think the Suns look like a very good team. But based on my bracket, I probably went for the Golden State Warriors. And the reason why I did that was seeing Steph Curry coming back yesterday. And kudos to Steve Kerr for trusting Jordan Poole yesterday and playing Steph Curry from the bench. I think it's going to be a tough decision for him to make.
He repaid that faith by
doing. Yes, I think it's going to be a tough decision for Steve Kerr on what to do with that, because the experience of Klay Thompson, Steph Curry is not something you just want to throw aside. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the contribution of Jordan Poole is not something you just want to overlook. That is going to be a very big headache for him, which I think he's capable of solving. I trust him. He's been there before. And that's what the Warriors were known for, strength in numbers. So I just feel for the Suns and the Warriors, it will come down to experience. I just feel the Warriors, they've been there. They've seen it. They've lost the 3-1 lead. They've recovered from a 3-1 deficit. I just think when it comes down to that particular point, their experience will take them over the Suns.
Okay. All right. Perfect. And I'm looking on the east side of things as well. I strongly feel after watching the 76ers yesterday and seeing how the Butler of playoffs played yesterday, and it wasn't terrific, but of course it was not substandard as expected of him. And I saw how well Joe played as well. I'm looking at it like, looks like it's gonna be a tough ask to say the 76ers should not be in the conference final and probably represent the East in the playoff finals as well. Malali, your opinion about that? I'm pretty sure you chose the Bucks, right? You chose the Bucks.
I went for the Bucks to win everything all in the East, but I think I take the 76ers to play them in the conference final. To be sincere, with what I saw the 76ers yesterday, the question about the 76ers is who's going to be that third guy? If Maxi can, what do you call it, night after night can produce not what he even did yesterday, something close to that, probably averaging 25, I think the 76ers can probably upset, what do you call it, the Bucks. As for their potential semifinal opponents in the Miami Heat, the Miami Heat, if you look at their rotation, is very deep. They have a lot of players, but I think when it comes to talent, I think talent will take over when they meet, what do you call it, the 76ers. And I think if they meet 76ers, 76ers will have the two best players on the court, which I think will take them through. On the other part, I don't see it will take a miracle for anybody to stop the Bucks for getting to the conference final. I think that their series against the Chicago Bulls is going to end in 4 games. It's going to be a sweep. And whoever comes out between the Celtics and the Nets, we take them far, probably 6 games. But the Bucks, I think, will still win it. Except something changes about the Ben Simmons is the only person that can alter
the balance
of the East for now. If Ben is not coming back, because the Milwaukee, in time of size, the Milwaukee guys will just be, if Brooklyn survive Celtics, it should be a catwalk for them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you very much, Olawale. Kachi, do you agree with Olawale? 76ers, the Buck, what do you think will potentially, and like Olawale said, with the caveats, Ben Simmons can actually change things. As it stands right now, but potentially all things being equal, even let's say Ben comes back fit within the next 2 games for the Nets, and the Nets miraculously the Nets overcome the Celtic, plays against the Bucks, let's see that way, you know. Mm-hmm. it's just an early prediction. Your thoughts?
I think Olawale just offhandedly disregarded the Miami Heat, who have the best record in the East. And judging from their game one victory against the Atlanta Hawks, tells me that what they were known for will still come into play in the playoffs. And what they are really known for is the fact that they have an amazing guy in Eric Spoelstra as a coach. Olawale said that it will come down to the talent. And I really think it will not. I think it will come down to coaching on the night. And on that night, if the 76ers get to face the Heat in round two, I sincerely believe that the Heat has the better coach between Doc Rivers and Eric Spoelstra. He's a two-time championship winning coach. He's been to the final 5 times. He knows what it takes to play in the final. Yes, Doc Rivers has also won it. No, I'm not taking anything away from him. But I'm basically saying, don't already, if you're a betting man, don't bet already that the 76ers are a shoe into that final. Watching their first game, yes, Tyrese Maxey was on fire in game one. But this is a guy who averages 17 points per game. And like Olawale said, you need him to at least average 25 points per game during the playoffs for the 76ers to have a viable third option. I'm saying so because, yes, Embiid will get his points. You can't do anything about that. Tobias Harris will blow hot and cold. It's who he has been all year long. James Harden is the one that has shown that come every playoff, he cannot be trusted. He almost did lay the goose egg in game one yesterday until he started getting to the free throw line and start padding his numbers. All this is to say that the Nets has a deeper squad, they have the better coach, and they have a meaner defensive game. And I agree with Olawale in some sense that, yes, Ben Simmons will alter the landscape should he return. But we need to first see him. I mean, imagine him returning in game two, in round two.
Yeah.
And that is the first time he will play any kind of basketball in more than a year. There is no way, no matter how talented he is, that he will become a force to reckon with.
Exactly.
You need games and reputation and repeat performances to get to your elite level. Group. And he's missing that right now. That's why I will still give a slight nudge to the Bucks, but I think we might just be looking at the Bucks Miami Heat Eastern Conference Final, my opinion.
All right, perfect. And I would hold you on to that side. I will hold on to that. And I would love to see your prediction come true.
It will be a great series. Yes, it might not be the series everybody wants. We all want to watch Giannis and KD again.
Yeah.
But because it is if they manage to scale through the Celtics, they definitely will meet the Bucks in the round two. It means we're not getting into the Eastern Conference. And that tells me it might just be the Miami Heat that will face the Bucks.
All right, perfect. I will hold you on to that. Shay, I'm gonna come to you right now. Meryl Spence Jr., Vados, your Dennis Ugas. It looks like on paper, it looks like it was gonna be a little bit one-sided, but we had a little bit of competition. Although Errol Spence still decided to kill someone on the night, you know, or should I say almost kill someone on the night.
I think going into the bout, everybody knew Errol Spence was going to be the favorite. He's the reigning WBC and I think IBF welterweight champion. And of course, over the years, we've seen the likes of, the fighters he has taken down. In fact, at the moment, his slogan is man down. So he has actually been the star boy of the welterweight so far in the last 5 years. But there was a little bit of a lot of fans were a little bit skeptical about that he has not also fought for some time.
Okay.
Mean that he had to go for the torn retina, surgery. That was the injury that took him out of the Pacquiao fight that made Ugas have the opportunity to fight Pacquiao, yes, and become the proper champion in this weight division. But talking about the fight proper, uh-huh. I think Ugas also fought as a champion, but in my opinion, I think he came with the wrong tactics, and that is what actually worked against him. If you want to fight Errol Spence, you need to go and pick the brain of Sean Porter, because I still think that's the person that stood toe-to-toe with Spence. And even though he lost, but he came out without major damage, he decided to fight against Spence toe-to-toe. He allowed him to come on the inside, which is the proper, the advantage that Errol Spence actually needs to defeat any fighter. He allowed that most, I think, throughout the fight. And that is where he actually sustained the injury that took him out of this bout.
Of the bout.
He gave all the opportunity to Spence to be able to give him the body shots, which made him lower his guard down. And he was able to rip him out with several uppercuts.
Uppercuts.
Do you believe that the difference between the punches between these two boxers at the end of the day was over 100 punches?
Holy moly.
Errol Spence had more than 100 punches than you guys in that particular fight. So definitely, what do you expect? There could be only one winner.
One winner, of course.
And Spence is another fighter that the way he starts from, round one, that is the way Spence will keep coming at you to round 12. He has that. He has that ability. Endurance. He has that prowess. He has that endurance to fight up to 15 rounds if possible. So for me, coming into the fight, I knew Spence was going to win this, even though I wasn't expecting a TKO. So that was the only surprise for me in this particular
bout.
Yeah, all big right. ups to Spence. We look forward to greater things for the right. young man.
Perfect. And of course, to the mismatch that we're expecting later this month, Dillian White versus Tyson Fury. Kachi, this is for me. When Olayinka was talking, I'm like, okay, this is a mismatch. It's at least, but someone will get money out of it, definitely. But I don't know if you re-echo my sentiment as of the fact that this is a mismatch, and unless a miracle happens from somewhere, maybe Tyson Fury has neglected Jesus and gone back to drugs taking. I don't see any surprises here.
It is a mismatch, but so was the fight between Mike Tyson and James Buster Douglas a mismatch until Douglas did shock the entire world.
Did one of them.
They still have to face each other. Let's not forget that we thought, well, most of us who knew that Deontay Wilder was not a technical boxer, but just a one-hit wonder. Thought that fight, the trilogy, was also a mismatch. But in spite of that, Wilder was still able to get Tyson Fury on the canvas a number of times. All it takes is for Dillian White to connect in the most unbelievable way, and he will be counted out. You know, talent-wise, he cannot be compared to.
Did you watch his last fight, though? Did you watch Dillian White's
last
fight?
Yes, okay. I watched Dillian's fight. And you are not going to use the last fight to compare. And I'm not saying, ladies and gentlemen, please let me put it. Oracle Kachi is not saying that Dillian White will defeat Tyson Fury.
That is not my take.
What I'm saying is, do not rule out. Let's not rule it out. Because the man has nothing to lose. He has a chip on his shoulder. A fight that is likely to fetch $100 million is only getting about 20 million of it, percentage-wise. There's a lot to prove. And we also know that Tyson Fury is not as motivated as he was if it would have been the trilogy, which just ended, or potentially if it had happened facing an Anthony Joshua. So there's really not a lot of motivation on his side. And even if he loses, he will go back, like you would say, and he bought a yacht off the money he made from the trilogy. He's made his name. He's the lineal champion. He will probably lose it. All that is to say that in spite of me expecting Tyson Fury to win, I will not be surprised due to the lack of motivation to see Dillian White fight dirty and fight hard and get a knockdown or two that will make this fight become the talk of the year. But after all this, my rambling, I'm still coming back to say, I see a Tyson Fury winning this fight. Thank you
very much. Shayi, I'd like you to just eat the armor and the nail. Like, I don't agree with anything that Kachi said at all. And I love him for saying it was rambling. I'm pretty sure Kachi was just trying to play devil's advocate. Like, okay, let's give this four man a chance.
I think Kachi has said it perfectly well. It's the heavyweight division. I think Dillian White is more bothered about the 20% share of the post than everything we are saying.
I'm sorry to just chip in.
Apologies to Dillian White.
Kachi, right now the Brooklyn Nets are leading the Boston.
Yes, right, I just saw that now.
Okay, go ahead, Shay, please.
Yeah, like I said, I said the young man is more bothered about the 20% of the post split than any other thing we are saying here. But at the same time, I hope that will not be the what will propel the grudge on that day. But like you said, we should eat the nail on the head. I don't think anybody can see Dylan White defeating Tyson Fury.
I see. Okay.
Everything is against Dylan White. The reach, the height, the skill.
Exactly.
Everything
exactly.
is against him.
The age. So
it will actually be a massive shake in the heavyweight.
I'm not a gambler. But I'm pretty sure if I pay like $10,000, I'm still going to win. I'm going to call four or five rounds tops. honestly, because the last time I saw Dylan White fight, it looks rusty. It looks out of shape. I don't know. Unless there's something different right now, like I just said, I don't know how he's going to do it. All right. Of course, Tsitsipas defended his Monte Carlo title, defeating Alejandro Fokina, the conqueror of Joker in the same tournament. Balali, I know it's just a pre-match warm-up, pre-tournament warm-up where everybody wants to make name for themselves, but Monte Carlo is still a big tournament as far as I'm concerned. I start to be corrected, but it's still a big tournament for me. Tsitsipas winning this, he defeated Alexander Zverev in the course of winning, defeated the conqueror of Novak Djokovic as well. How well should we place him going to the French Open proper right now? Because everybody is still looking. Okay, of course, Berrettini, I need to put it out there. Berrettini probably not feature in the French Open, so lesser opposition. But Djokovic is Nadal's tough. What should we expect from this past quarterfinals, semifinals, at the very least? Olali?
I don't have the brackets with me, unfortunately. But if I'm to place my bet on him, just have to place my bet on him reaching the quarterfinals. I don't think I can probably give him any. I can, what do you call it? I can call anything more than that. Because I have Nadal, who probably it will take God, or for him to retire, or broken leg, for him to lose the French Open. There is a Novak Djokovic, and so a couple of other young guys who are very serious about tennis. So I think my best bet for him is the quarterfinals.
All right, perfect. So in the course of it, he defeated everybody there is to defeat. Anyways, he really did try. Defeated for Guinea of Italy as well, which is a good word for the young lad. And of course, Kachi. Boris Becker is in trouble right now. He declared himself bankrupt and ultimately spending money while bankrupt. And this reminds me of a certain young buck that 50 Cent had spoiled his life. He said he's bankrupt, and he did an interview flashing good teeth, his Ford truck, and amongst other things. And now the court is coming after him to say, we need those things. He said, you are bankrupt, you don't have money. How do you get all these things? I know Boris Becker is a legend by all standards. I don't like to misuse that word. Not everybody's a legend, but when we're talking about Boris Becker, this is a legend. Should he get a pass for this?
I really don't think so. I think no one is above the law. I really think the law should take its course. For our listeners who don't know, Becker, who filed for bankruptcy in 2013, is being held accountable for failing to declare property in Germany and hiding about $895,900 bank loan and shares in a technology firm. He has argued that all the $50 million career earning he made was all lost in the course of a very nasty divorce. And having to pay the bulk of the divorce fees and all that for his estranged wife. Coming back to all this, I really don't expect him to get a pass if it is found and it's proven beyond every reasonable doubt that he hid facts or he hid some money. But that is life outside tennis. It's not going to take away from what he has done in tennis. And I will ascribe that to the case of O.J. Simpson, who, in spite of all his all his numerous legal issues, was not stripped of his Hall of Fame induction. He was not stripped of his Heisman Trophy that he won in college, because the sporting world tend to separate your activities, your actions in the world of sports from your personal activities. So barring any uncertainty, I expect the law to take its full course. I get them before no be my own today. Pretty much that's what the case of Boris Becker is. In fact, it's even a bigger news because of the fact that he was a big name and a big draw. But the way I want justice to treat me fairly is how I would want justice to also treat that case fairly. But I wish him the best.
You're not best. You're not Boris Becker.
But I'm not giving him any pass.
Should we say, is it fair to say suspended sentence for Boris Becker? We've seen it happen in Spain many times.
Every country is quite different. I don't know. Was it found guilty in a British court or a German court?
The British court.
So of course. So I know the Britons, even the Germans, when it comes to tax evasion, they don't take it lightly. I think the former Bayern Munich president, what was his name, Sam?
Rummenigge.
He went on jail. Because of the, something like this. So. Europeans, they don't joke with it when it comes to insolvency, tax evasion, all those kind of things.
He did add so much money. Anyways, he hit about $1.2 million.
That's a whole lot. That's a whole lot. So, I think I saw one headline now. The mother is begging for the court to not to sentence his very decent son to jail. So that means he's almost starting of going. I think we don't have any say about this. It's not about tennis. It's not about his legendary sport. It's about the society and the law.
Oh, it's certainly Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, Mourinho should be in jail as well.
Because they knew about the Spanish law. That was why they were doing all those things.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that wonderful analysis and straight face, jacket face. I wish I don't, God forbid, I wish I don't meet any of you guys as a judge. You people are just so wicked. You're not even thinking about this guy is a six-time Grand Slam champion. Well, 44. An Olympic gold medalist.
Let's put it in perspective, Debo.
I was just joking.
The famous guy who acted Blade, Wesley Snipes, famous Oscar nominee, numerous movies.
I was just joking. Still spent
some time because he did money from the IRS.
Of course.
The laws just take its course. Let's not forget Wesley Snipes is a chief in Nigeria. He was given a chieftaincy title, but his title did not help him.
Nigeria will give you anything, anyways. all right, perfect. Thank you very much, guys, for those wonderful analysis. We'll go on a quick break right now. Or we'll come back. We'll be jumping to the review of Luka Modric exploits in the Champions League, the Alonso handball, and many more. Don't go anywhere, guys. So as the show continues, handball. By Marcos and Alonso, the former Real Madrid boy, and so basically, people tend to talk about how well Madrid played on the night, and how well the pass by Luka Modric, which I've seen Deco, JJ Okocha and the rest do so many times, and I'm wondering why people are going all and on about it. I'm going to come to that question later anyways, but my real question is, looking at the Real Madrid team, Shiri, and I'm going to start with you, it's evident for me, I don't know, I stand to be corrected, but for me it's evident that the trail of Toni Kroos, Casemiro and Luka Modric cannot play two games in 7 days. It's evident. And as much as people want to say Carlo on the night did pretty well, I will go for Carlos Juggernaut and say, why go through that rigor? why play those three guys again? Why not Thomas over Valverde in the middle of the park, probably resting someone like Toni Kroos, bringing him in second half? And because it ultimately could have avoided the extra time, should be told. But I stand to be corrected. Shehi, I want to support your opinion on that.
Okay, I think your opinion is not so bad, but I'm of the opinion that Carlo Ancelotti feels the league is almost his. He would rather put his best team out to play the Champions League match. Also, he shows the I think that a starting lineup also shows the way he respected the Chelsea team, despite leading with a 3-1, away 3-1, really, and to put out your best team out there. I think he knew what was coming from him, what was coming for his team, and decided to do that. We could see it in another perspective that he also wants the younger guys to come on and wear down the Chelsea team. He wanted to start with the older guys so that he can remove them one after the other. The trial of Modric, Kroos, and Casemiro has been the reason why Real Madrid has been flying in this competition. Don't let us forget that. So I just feel it's easier for him to rest these guys you are talking about in the league that he has quite an enormous leading point.
But unfortunately, he did not rest them in the league as well. That's where the problem comes. And these guys, I feel they don't have the leg to play this kind of, especially Toni Kroos and Luka.
Yeah, I actually think Toni Kroos, yes. But Luka still looks much more mobile, because most times he plays almost like an intuitive football. Before the ball comes, he knows what he wants to do. If he wants to run, he runs. If he wants to throw the long pass, he throws it immediately. At times, he does one touch passes, and that is it. What you said is it's not far from it, but don't forget they are playing in the Spanish league. If we are talking about the English Premier League, I'm very sure the coach will not risk that. So I guess he was able to control the pace of the game. That's why he decided to do that.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Olali, I'm going to come to you. I've been an ardent antagonist of Thomas Tuchel's tactics, not because I feel he's a bad coach, but on the night he came out and brought out the attacking foray of Chelsea, playing four at the back, which made Chelsea more expressive. On the night, how would you rate the tactics of TT on the night? Because even Timo Werner, that we think loses chances after chances, was brilliant. And that's because they are not being overwhelmed with defensive-minded football, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, he needs to make an adjustment. Real Madrid, at this stage, at this level of football, you need to be dynamic. Real Madrid had the answer to their wing-back formation, and they had to do a bit of switch, get a bit of more bodies around the midfield and the attack, which probably worked for them. They scored early on. It was spot on. But unfortunately, they lost the game in the first leg by conceding that third goal. N'Golo Kante probably gave up like two goals. The second one was partly in game. And again, when you talk about the formation switch, probably that second goal by Madrid in the first half of that time would have been prevented if it was a five-man at the back. Because immediately, Kante missed the ball.
Uh-huh.
And James was carried away. That particular left side was free for Vinicius to run through and make that cross. Probably a five-man defense would have probably prevented that goal. But again, that could have probably stifled them of some creativity. going forward. I think it was spot on. The formation was spot on. They played very well. They gave it their all. They were 3-0 up at a point in time, meaning they could have qualified. But again, the damage was done for me in the first leg.
Kachi, I'm going to come to you. Still on TT. And what I wonder is, TT could have been in contention for the league right now if against the small teams in the Premier League, at least against the small teams, for crying out loud, you play this kind of formation. Wear them down, score 4-5 goals against them. You have the quality. We are looking at one of the youngest and the most talented team in attacking sense in the Premier League. And I'm wondering, why don't you do this? Why do you keep with this five at the back? Invisible five at the back, so to speak. Some people will tell you it's not five at the back, but it is five at the back for me. Why do you keep to it, especially in the league where you can actually wear them Burnley and the rest down and be in contention right now?
You'll have to forgive me, but I will use an analogy you may not like. It's similar to watching, you know, very skillful African teams, Nigerian Super Eagles, even though they are not going to the World Cup, struggle to play their brand of football against fellow African national teams, right? But when they get to the big stage, World Cup, where teams play with clear-cut cerebral formations, you get to see both sides. You get to see the beautiful side of the Nigerian national football team or otherwise. So my point really is, in English football, apart from the big six, the bulk of the mid-table and the ones struggling for survival tend to come with that static 4-4-2, which is what they start with. But at the end of the day, they tell you, just go out there and don't lose, pretty much, which is what the coach tells them. So I'm saying that to say, and a case in point would be Norwich City, a team languishing on the 19th position, making a game of what they did against Manchester United over the weekend, even though Manchester United clearly should play a game that dominates them, like what you expect from Thomas Tuchel. All this I'm saying, I'm come back to say, it's down to the caliber of team you play. When you play in a league where teams don't necessarily respect you, but they will play out of formation and make two of you look bad, you tend to just play anyhow to win your game, because we're not going to see that expansiveness that you will see in Europe. Everybody knows the Spanish league is the most technical league in the world. They know the Italian league is the slowest league in the world, you know, but they know the English league for being the fastest league in the world. It's end to end, nonstop, such that if you play that style of football today, I don't think Chelsea has that squad depth that City or Liverpool has to churn out another set of 11 players, make 7 wholesome changes, and get your guys to play the same way. Playing that requires a lot of legs, a lot of energy. And you could see, that's why Thomas Tuchel could come out to say, oh, we lost against Real Madrid, but we gave everything, because it requires giving everything. I think it's difficult to do in the league with the kind of players he has. He has some players that can play that way, but not all of them. I mean, they spent 109 million euros to bring in Lukaku. I don't think Lukaku has scored 10 goals. Has he scored 10 goals this year?
I'm not sure.
No, I don't. I don't think he has. So he does not have that depth to demand his players to play that way week in, week out. If it's the Champions League, it's your tournament, it's once every 2 weeks, you can do that and recuperate. That is my explanation, but I mean, guys may have contrary opinion.
I don't know. I do have a contrary opinion anyways, but I don't know if Ola Ali do have a contrary opinion or Sheyi does.
Sheyi does not.
Okay, for me, I feel definitely he has the players to play that kind of formation. Is a coach that is not scared to use the youth. We've seen players like Sa playing in the league and all. So if he wants to, he can actually. I don't know why he chooses not to. And stay true to your heart. But like Ola Ali says, Celtic actually did win the game 115-114. It's too bad, sad day. But at least it was a close call. Maybe we'll see.
But it was what we expected anyway. Yeah, we expected the Celtics to win.
Exactly. So honestly, I feel probably maybe if he should do his stay true to his belief. But like Olai said a couple of months back, he said something snapped off Thomas Tuchel while he was at PSG. He just wants to be careful. But I don't know. Anyways, just before we leave the Real Madrid and Chelsea game, Olai, and I'm gonna come to you. I saw the tweet flying around on Twitter that's when they call Xavi and Iniesta and Zinedine Zidane, Luka Modric will be on the table. And I'm like, what is everybody smoking? It's two things. See that people are smoking something that is too strong for their brain, or I'm the one on something that is too strong for my brain. Because I'm wondering, I no disrespect to Luka Modric. He's a very good midfielder. He's a wonderful midfielder. I don't see Luka Modric being better than... I see like a JJ Okocha that is just... That plays for Real Madrid. That's the way I see him. And I'm wondering why
I'm a Ballon d'Or winner.
Come on. Come on. It doesn't matter, honestly. If he was not playing for Madrid, I'm sorry to say this. If Ronaldo did not leave Real Madrid that season, Ronaldo would have won the Ballon d'Or. But I don't want to dabble into all that. And I'm wondering, is it the same Iniesta that I know, and the same Xavi? And suddenly you're equating it to a Luka Modric to those guys? Come on, man.
Well, to answer your question, it is what they call a recency bias in psychology. At times, things we are seeing now, we tend to like make it look like it's the best jollof rice we've eaten in our life. So I think it's just recency bias. And at the same time, again, this is the era of the social media. Even around 2006, 2007, up 2011, 2012, when the Minnesota were winning, you can't compare the social media presence then with what we have now. Now, everything's all about hype. Everybody just wants to hype players from their team. So I think it's just a matter of hype. Whoever knows football, who probably watches football, you don't need to argue, or you don't need anybody to tell you that, or you don't need to engage anyone in such conversation about Xavi, Luka Modric, or Iniesta.
Yes, Luka Modric. Okay. All right.
It's a thing to football.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank God. So now I can. Oh, Kachi, do you agree? Shey, do you agree? Do you guys agree with all this?
I definitely agree that it's recency bias. I remember during our production call, I told you that I personally will not even... Luka Modric cannot even tie the laces of a certain Manuel Rui Costa, who played for Portugal and AC Milan.
I like that name. You took me back to those days.
But if you mention in Rui Costa now to the fans of today's football who did not get to watch Rui Costa because the Serie A was not shown everywhere, and we don't have access to live highlights of games like we do now, they'll be like, who in heaven's name is Rui Costa? And Modric is light years.
Sorry for interrupting you. For any recent football fan who doesn't know who they call Rui Costa, he actually played with Gabriel Batistuta in Fiorentina before moving to AC Milan, and he won the Champions League. But just refer them to one game. Just one game. Euro 2000, England versus Portugal.
That is it. Yes. I mean, and this is someone without... He never used to shoot the ball. Rui Costa probably scored only one or two goals for AC Milan during his career because he was a puppet master who dictated everything good happening with either the Portuguese national team or even the Rossoneri then. And I personally think that maybe Rui Costa would be at the door, not at the table, when the likes of the Xavis, the Iniestas, the Zidanes would be at the table sitting. Rui Costa would be at the door telling Modric to stay outside because the big boys are talking. That's my personal opinion. That's really why I agree with Olawale.
All right, perfect. Shey, do you agree with the guys or you have a contrary opinion?
Okay. I partially agree, and I have my reasons. I think you guys are totally right, right? But at the same time, I think Luka Modric actually deserves some respect, and I have my reasons for that. Player we just mentioned now played actually with a lot of first-class players beside them. If we are talking about Rui Costa, Rui Costa set in Portugal was actually a golden set, even though they didn't win anything.
Golden generation.
We are talking about Zidane. Zidane played with the likes of top guys in other clubs, also in the French team. That being said, I think Modric is a class ahead of the class you guys put in. Why? This guy plays for Croatia. Croatia is probably a country of maybe 2.5 million. And we can see what he has done over the years. Probably because we had the opportunity to see Modric when he was in Tottenham.
Spurs.
Spurs. Before he went to Real Madrid, we knew this guy was actually a class above any average midfielder. Now, talking about his age now and what he produces, I think he deserves the respect being thrown at him. But that being said, he's not close to the class of the likes of Zidane.
Thank you. So I'm not the one that is on
and
crack.
The Jarvis.
Okay, I'm not the one. I just wanted to clear that so I would know I'm not on crack. Anyways, but I
thank you for mentioning that you co-star.
I say
sorry, I didn't get that.
Hold on a second. Just to put it out there, I'm being respectful to Luka Modric, placing him beside Didi Okocha, who's probably the most complete midfielder Africa I've ever seen. The most complete in terms of a number 10. And his Deco, if not because of that calamitous move to Chelsea that stifled his attacking powers, is one of the best that I've seen play that same bro as well. So I really enjoy watching Luka, but Luka is not close to those guys.
You have a point, because if we have it as a pyramid, we'll probably put, and personal opinion, I'll probably put Zinedine Zidane first, simply because of not just statistics or talent, but what he was able to do with his talents. Then I will put the Xavi, Iniesta.
Let me just say something. And I think
next,
I will just lose the
and
case.
Then the third case, the third level would be Modric,
Okocha,
JJ, Deco,
Andres.
Maybe something.
Andres Nesta's nickname. Yeah. Andres Nesta's nickname in Spanish is called El Celebron, the Brain.
One day somebody will come out and tell us that who is the best number 10 in England right now? They will say Messi Mount is better than Ronaldinho. One day I can tell you
is better
than Jack Grealish. One day they will tell us.
See, a day will come, somebody will tell you that Pedri right now was better than the heydays of even Xavi or Iniesta. It's going to come.
Yeah,
it is what recency bias causes.
They'll tell us all day. All right, perfect. Thank you very much, guys, for clarifying that. After the shock results, every panelist here got that wrong, apart from Shehu was not here, so it could be excused. Olayinka ran away because he knew he got it wrong. That's why he's on the show today. Bayern Munich versus Villarreal. I didn't see it coming. I did not see it coming. But I thought I even capped Lewandowski because I felt Lua was going to at least come more goals against them. And that at the Allianz Arena, they lost against Villarreal. They drew against Villarreal 1-1. And the question is, they drew against Villarreal 1-1.
Yeah.
And the question is, what has been flying around in Germany? The death threat towards Nagelsmann after they lost the game. I don't really rate Nagelsmann's the gengen, because he just comes out with different alterations. Be like, okay, what's this guy doing today? I don't understand. But of course, this is not German league. But for the case of death threats against these people, I think it's unacceptable at this level. at this level, I think is unacceptable. And of course, on Wednesday, as expected, Atletico Madrid played their boring football and whatever they could throw at City. They did, and they were able to grind out. They were unlucky not to have scored a goal anyways against City. Played 0-0. But my pain, or should I say, the fatigue Atletico Madrid gave to me after it was post the game with the aggressiveness, the antics, everything. They did the same thing against Manchester United. Everything they are competing against, they did it against United. They were wasting time. They were on the floor for seconds trying to eat off time. And City did the same thing against them. And they went on a mad rage. Abshehi, I'm going to come to you. They went on a mad rage and did everything possible, fighting everybody. City rejects. Stefan Savic was on the front foot, trying to disrupt everything.
He can't eat the Arab money. Don't worry. He can't do that. He's not eating the Arab money.
But realistically, what should be done to Atletico Madrid, to deter them from doing stuff like this in the future? And for every club, for God's sakes.
Anyway, there was a time we said something, we mentioned something on this show, talking about coaches and players, that when you see a particular, especially the charismatic coaches, the ones that actually imprint their DNA in the team, we see similar thing in their team. Mm. What's it called?
Simone.
Diego Simeone is an aggressive character. We know Diego Simeone. Diego Simeone is not on the pitch. You will actually think it is him almost taking the shot himself. So I think that Atletico Madrid team has actually taken quite a lot in from Diego Simeone. When you see them in a match, a do or die match like what we saw against Man City, definitely I was expecting what I saw. But I expected them to be, you know, to be aggressive in terms of the match itself against the City players. But what happened on the day is that Olawale's friend, Guardiola actually surprised Diego Simeone. I'm very sure Diego Simeone thought Man City was going to play the usual Man City way, soft pass around and try to just get the goals. But Guardiola also surprised Atletico by coming with a physical approach, even though his wounds right now with some of his players injured. But that was the way he came at Atletico. And obviously, when you see someone, not expecting to be aggressive against you, they're aggressive against you, and they are probably doing it better than you. It triggers something in you. So I guess that's what happened to the Atletico players on the night. They were trying to get a goal, they were unable to get it. I'm surprised Atletico is claiming that Man City came to defend. That was the first time I'm hearing that from an Atletico Madrid camp. So I guess that is what triggered the aggressiveness from Atletico Madrid. It shouldn't happen in a normal game, but it happened. Your question is, how do UEFA make sure such things does not happen again? I think the ref should have handled the game better. He should have dished out cards to the players earlier, because I noticed that at a time he was actually just talking to them to try to calm them down. Maybe he doesn't want to lose key players in the later part of the Champions League. But I think throwing out a stronger referee in a match like that could have made it better.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Shay. And of course, Liverpool versus Benfica. They said Ibrahim Konate Konate is the new striking god for Liverpool these days. He scored a goal. Roberto Firmino scoring two as well. And of course, the guy that most people are not talking about, Nunes Darwin Genting on the score chart as well. Since you're wearing flying Emirates, I am flying. And Benfica wears flying Emirates as well. I'm going to come to you, Kachi. How surprised were you? The 3-3. Wow. Everybody felt okay. Probably it's going to be like a show for Liverpool.
Yeah, pleasantly surprised, I have to admit. I actually predicted a 3-1 win for Liverpool, and I almost tweeted that when it was 3-2. That look at how these people are just
go ahead.
These people just ruining my oracle tendencies when they made it 3-2. I was really impressed with the mindset and the setup of the team. Let's not forget that they had a goal or two ruled out for offside as well by VAR. But you also have to admit that a Liverpool team that made 7 changes and paired Konate with, I don't think it was Matip. I think it was Matip and Konate on the night.
They were
bound to be mistakes. And even Klopp admitted that centre-back pairing had not played together before. That is a second-team centre-back pairing. That is not a first-team centre-back pairing. But that does not take away from the effort, from the determination and the expansiveness Benfica played with. I think they made themselves look really good drawing that match. It was filled with goals. Neutrals like us enjoyed seeing all those goals. But yes, I was really surprised. It was not the result I expected. But Liverpool could afford to do that, knowing they had a 2-goal margin. And they have a better squad depth, playing like the Brazil of old. And I'm talking of the Brazil that had Rivaldo, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Kaká in the team. That tells you, We are going to play these 4 people. We don't care if you score 5, we can score 6. And that's really what Liverpool did on the day. I think they had an eye on the FA Cup semi-final. And based on the result we saw over the weekend, those changes were fully justified.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. Lale, I'm going to come to you. Ten Hag has secretly put pen to paper for Manchester United. And after saying, quote and unquote, that Ronaldo is not part of his plan for Manchester United next season, and the fact that he wants 100% right and final say over the team, how well should we be expecting this guy to settle down? And is this going to be a long project? Like, it's not going to be a short-term fix?
Well, a project... in football, you can't determine. You can actually, on paper, make something like, okay, you might probably have an intention to make something a long-term project or a short-term project. At times, results is what probably determines what constitutes a long-term or short-term project. No club actually, if Man United didn't plan for Alex Ferguson to spend that 20-something years he spent, it was because it was working. Why change what is working? At the stand in Man City today, if Guardiola doesn't want to go, I'm not sure, unless the results, something drastically bad happens, Guardiola will remain at City for like a year. But looking at Ten Hag, I think the quote about not wanting Ronaldo, I'm not sure how true it is, because the origin of that quote was from Daily Star. And if you are very conversant with British tabloids, Daily Star is not one of those tabloids that you take serious. If you want to get, there are some very, what do you call, reliable guys when it comes to United that get daily briefs from the United board or United management, James Docker, some couple of guys in ESPN and the Athletics. So I think that's aside. But for him wanting total control, based on what we heard about what transpired at the interview, there were more of him that was the one actually intervening. John Moteg and Darren Fletcher. So, like, knowing the fact that what United has been through, looking at what has happened to other coaches in the past, from Luis Van Gaal to Jose Mourinho, I can remember that season when Mourinho actually asked for Ivan Perisic. In as much as I'm not a big fan of Mourinho, I think probably that signing could have made a bit of difference in the way Mourinho wanted to play and in the way he wants to utilize Lukaku. And so, looking at the way some of these coaches have been, probably the board has turned against them or doing the, what they feel they want to do rather than what the coaches want, I think it just makes sense for him to demand full control. Not only demand full control, demand that this had to be written like part of the agreement.
Agreement with them, yeah.
Because as it stands, United is more of a club that will probably damage your reputation now rather than adding to it. So I think it's a safe bet for him before taking the job, having to make sure everything he wants is in. At least when you fail based on your terms, you can live with it rather than when tomorrow. Because let me tell you something, leaving it for the United board, let me tell you the way the United board thinks. They only have £150 million to spend in the transfer window. And they have a team that probably needs to address like 4, 5, 6 positions. They would rather spend the £100 million on Declan Rice that would generate a lot of Twitter boost, reactions, and just find another player to sign with that £50 million, and that is all. And expect the coaches to do magic. Rather than spreading the money around to buy players who could help the squad. So I understand where he's coming from. I understand why he's trying to take this action before signing the contract.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Kashi, I'm going to come to you because we're short on time right now. Liverpool City game, the FA Cup. The win for Liverpool, are we going to put it down to the team selection of City or more about the brilliance of Liverpool?
I think it's a little bit of both. When I saw the lineup over the weekend, I literally told myself, I think Guardiola got this wrong. But she has explained why he was forced to come up with such a lineup. Haven't played like Atletico Madrid during the week. I didn't say haven't played Atletico, but played like Atletico. He said that they were physical. Yeah. They were running into every tackle. This is not how those guys play football. So a lot of them ended up with knocks. I understand that even KDB had to take 4 stitches on his leg as well. He was forced into making those changes to give his players some rest. It tells me that on the surface, maybe first 15 to 15 to Liverpool, between Liverpool and Man City, City has a better top of 15 players. Uh-huh. But when it's 23, 30, 35 players, I think that is where Liverpool's edge over City comes to play. Liverpool could afford to play predominantly its first team, the first team, because players were rested midweek against
Benfica.
But then you play the team that is placed in front of you. You know, Liverpool could have gone into that game saying, oh, this is not the first team, and then become lackadaisical about it, which would have made City come into that game. They were decisive, played one of the best 45 minutes I've seen a team play. Of course, after the halftime pep talk from Pep Guardiola, and we've seen some of these videos on his halftime team talk, we know how it can get. The team came out guns blazing, but ultimately they shot themselves in the foot. Stephen tried to replicate what Ederson did during the 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
That came back to haunt them. But back to your question, I tend to agree that it is a combination of both, but it is due to no fault of Pep Guardiola. The team is stretched. We're at the business end of the season. Players would have to play with some knocks. He couldn't risk it because what if they played against City, against Liverpool, and aggravate more injuries that will keep them away for 2 more weeks? That means they already endangered their first leg against Real Madrid. So Olawale said this 2 weeks ago that if these two teams were called into a room and they asked City, what do you want? City will tell Liverpool, take the league and give me Champions League. And if you ask Liverpool will tell you, take the Champions League and give me the league. So City has shown us where their priority lies right now. It is in the Champions League. If the league comes, it's an added bonus. If the FA Cup had come, it's an added bonus. It's not what they're playing for this season. But you have to give credit to Liverpool. They took their chances when they had them. They could have scored more. Diaz was profligate. Sadio Mane also had some chances. We saw the chance that Mo Salah also blazed to the sky. But all credit to Jurgen Klopp. I think slightly he has the better team. Just slightly.
All right, perfect. I'm going to
add one little thing to what Katie said. Considering the fact that they have a Brighton on Wednesday, and you know, if there's a team that you can't predict what you get from them, it's Brighton. What does it stand to gain if you beat Liverpool with
and
everything
against,
you have
and
draw against Brighton,
Brighton
and lose the league?
Yeah,
so I
all
think
right.
That was just a simple decision.
Yeah, to the one that we missed out, Atlanta lost at home to RB Leipzig.
I did not miss that.
Barcelona were defeated at home 3-2 by Frankfurt, Metal Frankfurt. Aubameyang missing an open goal, and people actually wants to bring Arteta back into the discussion, which I feel is I don't know. I don't want to use bad word on radio. Rangers defeated Braga 3-1. Lyon lost at home against West Ham 3-0. Olayinka is not here. He predicted most of this correctly. Yes. And in the Europa League conference, of course, Leicester City qualified after defeating Eindhoven 2-1. Feyenoord to qualify against Slavia Prague 3-1 after winning 3-1. Mourinho defeated Bordeaux Glimt 4-0. And of course, Marseille qualified against Barcelona 1-0. All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. And to the roundup of the games in the English Premier League. In the English Premier League, we have Ronaldo doing another Ronaldo, scoring an hat-trick against Norwich, the 68th hat-trick career goal for Ronaldo, which is perfect and wonderful if you ask me. Hold on a sec.
I have a statistics to put out while you gather your thoughts.
Please do.
The statistics is Ronaldo scored 30 hat-tricks before his 30th birthday. And he has since scored 30 more hat-tricks after he turned 30.
Wow.
So if he scores any more hat-tricks now, it means that he scored more hat-tricks as an old man than he did playing as a youngster.
Can you imagine? Amazing, if you ask me. Of course, Tottenham Hotspur, they look serious right now. Lost against Brighton and Hove 1-0. Arsenal lost. Brentford moved to the 13th position in the league after defeating Watford away from home 2-1. Arsenal, like I said before, lost away to Southampton 1-0. Ronaldo scored an hat-trick to defeat Norwich City 3-2. Pukki actually have been consistently churning out double figures for the past four seasons ever since he transferred to Norwich City on a free transfer. Shot them to the league. To the Premier League, got relegated, shot them back to the Premier League. Now, with another double figure after that goal is scored against Manchester United, they're going back to the lower league. Maybe they will come back pretty soon. The game between Wolverhampton Wanderers and Manchester City was postponed because of the FA Cup. Newcastle defeated Leicester City. Tell me what money cannot do. 2-1. West Ham played a 1-1 draw thanks to a 74-minute assist by Lanzini to get them a 1-1 draw against Burnley. Konat actually did lose a penalty to put them on the edges. It's a gloomy time for Everton anyways. They are just 1 point ahead of Burnley, although with one game outstanding. But anything can happen in football. And of course, what else? Chelsea defeated Crystal Palace 2-0 to claim a final against Liverpool in the FA Cup. Back to Wembley. Shay, do we see Liverpool defeating Chelsea again? I don't think it's going to happen anyways.
But why? I think If you ask me, I think Klopp is in this FA Cup to win it. That's still the only trophy that is not in his own
bag already.
Yeah, in his own bag. Yes. So, yes. And I think that also added to what Kachi earlier said about the semi-final game against Man City. He knew coming, he had the opportunity to rest his boys against Benfica, and you can rightly see through Klopp that he really wants the FA Cup. This is the first time he's going to be getting to this stage of the FA Cup, and I think he's going to put everything in to win this. I'm actually tipping Liverpool to win the FA Cup.
Okay, Kachi, are you tipping Liverpool as well?
Yes, Olali did mention that the first three times they played in regulation time, it ended in a draw. I think because it's another final, I think Klopp is a faster learner than Thomas Tuchel. He's not so set in his ways, except his principle, which is we play gegenpress. I expect that, they can't all just be hitting the net, hitting the bar like they did during the Carabao Cup final. I think this would be close. Yes, I expect it to be close, entertaining as well. But I think the quadruple is still on for Liverpool.
Oh wow. Olale, are you sleeping? Are you facing the same place Sheyi and Kachi are facing right now? Or you have a difference of opinion? Liverpool Chelsea for the FA Cup final. Olale is not with us. And of course, Real Madrid came back to defeat Sevilla, having gone down two goals, thanks to Karim Benzema winning goal after Rodri, and of course Nacho helped them get back in the scorer sheet. So as it stands right now, Real Madrid are coasting home with 6 games to go, 15 points ahead of Barcelona and Sevilla. Atletico Madrid, thanks to Yanni Carrasco, 100th minute goal, actually did win on the weekend as well, holding fair to the fourth place, 3 points ahead of Real Betis. And in the Italian Serie A, Milan did win their game against Genoa 2-0. Inter Milan won against Spezia 3-1 to keep the heat on everybody's ear right now. Juventus, that was tipping to do something better, decided to play a 1-1 draw against Bologna. Lazio played a 1-1 draw against Torino as well. Fiorentina played a 1-0 win against Venezia, whilst Saracina won against Sampdoria 2-1. I wonder how that happened. Udinese actually beat Empoli 4-1, and Cagliari defeated Sassuolo 1-0. And of course, we have Napoli versus Roma later in the week, while Atlanta traveled host Alas Verona's at home. That's what we have for you today, and that's the wrap, and that's the show from this end. Thank you very much for staying tuned with us. So we'll see you again next week. Please support Chelsea against Liverpool, support Liverpool against Chelsea, and of course support Real Madrid against City. Don't go anywhere, guys. We love you, and we'll see you very soon. Bye.